Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teach Right, the podcast for first-time instructors, experienced instructors, and anyone else interested in the teaching of writing. I'm Daniel Anderson, and we're coming to you from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. We have a number of guests with us today, and I'll let them introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Spencer. I'm a first-year PhD student here in English and Comparative Literature, and I study primarily Victorian literature.
Hi, I'm Devin. I'm also a first-year English PhD student here at UNC, and I study multi-ethnic global Southern literature.
Hi, I'm Anna Blackburn. I'm a second-year PhD student in the English program, and I study the 19th century novel.
Hi, I'm Emma Bradford, also a second-year in the UNC PhD program, first-time teacher, and I study Renaissance drama.
Hello, I'm X. I am a second-year PhD student in English and Comparative Literature studying Queer Latinx Poetics.
Fantastic. Well, today our topic is feedback and grading. Without further ado, what do you all have to teach us about feedback and grading?
Do we want to just start with whoever found this very helpful article? Because it was a great selection, I think.
Yeah, I think that was me, right? I think so. So this really, I was drawn to this article because I've chatted with several other people who do grading contracts, and I'm very interested in it. I've decided to do traditional grading this semester, kind of just because it's what I know, it's what my students know, and as I'm kind of getting oriented to being a first-time instructor at Carolina, it just seems simpler. But I think there's something very, it's just a very interesting system, and it's something that I think can sort of renegotiate some classroom dynamics and anxieties that are more associated with traditional grading, and sort of give us a new way to think about feedback as being something other than just a piece of data, a data point, a number. And I'd love to hear from other people in the group who maybe have worked with this kind of contract system and how it went for them. And maybe get some ideas for how I and we might implement it in our future classes.
Yeah, so I was really excited that we selected an article about labor-based grading. I've done both traditional grading and several different kinds of labor-based or contract grading before, and I'm always excited to learn about the kind of pedagogical decisions behind labor-based grading and what goes into it. I'm currently teaching with a labor-based contract that factors in things like attendance to an extent, but more so if students are turning in their work, if they're putting in effort, and if they're kind of meeting the minimum expectations, while also allowing them to have opportunities for things like revision and room for error, just because I try to consider them as full people.
Yeah, someone who, I mean, very much, I think, like Spencer, you just described, I ended up going with traditional grading, even though I was very interested in contract grading. And I think I'm really excited to get into the details of how contract grading actually works and what it allows for, because I think what I've ended up doing is just having very generous rubrics, and it's sort of just allowed motivation to do kind of above and beyond work to start slipping away over the semester, because the students that started out doing that have realized that they don't have to necessarily. So I like the way that a true contract grade kind of starts everybody in a standard spot and then allows people to move up or move down as their schedules, as their interests, you know, whatever's going on with them permits. But, you know, there's still that motivating factor of, you know, if you really want to get something great out of this class, you can do this extra work and it's going to pay off by the end of the semester. I guess grades aren't the end-all be-all, but I do think it's on their minds and it's something they consider when they motivate themselves to do work.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I've had a similar issue this semester with motivation kind of slipping, and I have used contract grading, and I really like the concept, and I'm trying to figure out how to make it stronger for next semester and kind of raise expectations a little bit while keeping the stress level low, if that's possible. Like maybe just or like the article talked about, kind of catering your feedback in a way that treats the writing as like a piece on its own instead of just looking for negative aspects to try to help the student improve in that way. So I was really glad I got to read this article just to think about how I'm shaping my feedback.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, when I'm thinking, well, yeah, about grading and feedback and whatnot, I think where I lie, it's sort of between contract grading and the sort of labor-based grading. Because, like, I mean, this is my first time teaching something like this, so I was really confused about if I wanted to emphasize the grade or just, like, the feedback. And I ended up going more so with, like, the feedback and then also, you know, pointing out that, you know, this is a very, like, subjective thing. You know, like, the writing, regardless of whether it's, like, an academic or, like, a more creative sort of writing, it's still very, very subjective because I have to grade it myself. So it's really good to have these feelings challenged and placed within the context of labor-based grading specifically.
I like what the article said too about how when you're assigning a number, sometimes you spend a lot of time trying to like justify that number instead of actually focusing on the writing itself. So that, like, I had some doubts about my grading system this semester, but that did make me feel better because I think contract grading does allow me to spend more time on the writing than taking that time to compare papers to each other to figure out who deserves a few extra points or something like that.
Yeah, I share in that same, and that's kind of same thought, Anna. And I've kind of found myself with my rubrics almost kind of leaning into more kind of contractual rubrics, less number-based. Like, I tend to set up my rubrics kind of as a checklist. Like, do you have these things? If you have these things, you'll get an A. And I realize that's kind of more in line with sort of the ethos of maybe not so much the time aspect of the labor, but the kind of baseline expectations. Like, if you're meeting these criteria, you're doing well. That tends to be more kind of how I approach grading, which I think will sort of lean nicely into setting up the sort of here's what you need to do to get a B. Here's the kind of above and beyond things to do to get an A. So I think that there's ways that we can kind of transition, those of us who are doing traditional grading with rubrics, kind of try to move away from sort of the quantitative and into kind of the more sort of qualitative, descriptive, you know, elements of that contract that students can then use to make sure that they're meeting the criteria they need to meet.
Spencer, I want to pick up on you're starting to touch on the time element of this. And I think that's a huge tension I'm feeling in the article, or even just my reading of the article, is what is the difference between having time labor requirements and having like deliverable labor requirements? And I'm looking at the first table on our on the article, and the author breaks it down into labor requirements, which are mostly, you know, time specific, length specific, and then writing process steps. And I don't know, I'm curious to hear what you guys think about this, because I don't know that I'd ever feel comfortable requiring my students to like give my class a certain amount of labor, like a certain amount of their time, because they all have different sort of time banks that they're working with in their lives and that they're able to devote to the class. So, you know, I've already been reworking my syllabus and I've been looking at this chart, and I feel like I'm gravitating much more to the writing process step section, and I'm a bit more hesitant about the labor requirements and section and the labor log. And I don't know if I'm wrong about that. And I, you know, I know we have to give them requirements in some fashion, but I'm curious how you guys feel about sort of the tension between the time requirements and the deliverables in this article.
I think you put into words what I was kind of, what I've been processing about this article, because like seeing the number of minutes that when it listed those in certain places, I feel like that kind of threw me off. And like, we often talk about grading for instructors as a laborious process, and it kind of seems like you're putting a similar requirement on students when you do require a certain amount of time. So I think I was also leaning towards the writing process steps.
I've also been like, in contrast, as someone who's taught like with a kind of labor-based or contract-based, I've been on the opposite end as a student in a like labor-based classroom, and I've never had a professor at the graduate level do like a time-based requirement. And I think in thinking about my own pedagogy, I struggle with that a lot because I do spend a lot of time talking to my students and about what their writing process looks like. And so many students express frustration with like a disconnect in their own expectations for how long writing takes and how long it actually takes when they sit down to do it. So I think having this kind of temporal like marker of you need to put like 1 hour into your paper doesn't really account for like things like writer's block or account for different abilities in the classroom or account for different situations in which like things change throughout the semester in terms of students' like ability to devote their time.
I like that. And that I'm really stuck on your point about how they feel this disconnect mm-hmm. of like, oh, I thought this would take me an hour. It took me 5 hours. And I think that's maybe a positive take on this sort of time-based grading where I don't know that I want to ever link it to a grade, but maybe building in more time when we're talking about writing as a process and having this sort of like growth mindset in terms of their writing, that maybe bringing time into discussions could be a useful thing, mm-hmm. even if it's like the feedback, it's divorced from the grade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this leads me to another kind of question that I was hoping to get your thoughts on, and that it kind of stems from the conversation we were having in our pedagogy class where people were talking about sort of the tension with contract grading, where students are coming from a very traditional, you know, probably most of them at least, a very traditional grading system in their high school. And we're also working within an institution where most of their classes will be giving them a letter grade and really do follow that traditional structure. And how do we, if we might be the only class they ever take that has this kind of system, how do we kind of deal with the attendant anxieties or questions or even just kind of a lack of familiarity with that system from the students and negotiate the whole kind of problem of the grade, which I think this article really kind of leans into, when grades will still be so important for them as they continue their work in their bachelor's degrees. How do we negotiate that if we were to have a very different class where we're kind of trying to pull the attention away from that metric and focus it more on the feedback, on the reader-writer connection, all these great things that come up in the article? What were your thoughts on kind of navigating that tension?
Glad you brought that up, Spencer, because I think it talks about this at the end of the article, but like, even if we do choose a contract grading method, at the end of the day, like, we still do have to assign a letter grade. And I think it's important to keep that in mind and not just act like grades are thrown completely out the window, because students are, like, rightfully so concerned about the grade they're going to make in the class. And I know, like, in our pedagogy class today, people were talking about having to, like, reassure their students that they're going to be okay in terms of grades at the end of the semester. So maybe that is something that's just going to have to be part of the process, like just addressing concerns as they come up instead of pretending like students shouldn't be concerned about the grade.
I think one way that I have had the experience of like making sure that they don't feel like this is just some strange thing that your English teacher is doing that's quirky is like showing them like visually that this is coming from somewhere. So on my Canvas page, I have a citation. Well, two citations for where my contract is coming from and kind of what it's based off of. And I'm also very forward at the beginning of the semester about my pedagogy and the kind of ethics behind why I de-emphasize grades and instead emphasize like expectations and like my insistence that I want them to try to meet those expectations, even if it includes things like revisions or like accounts for the fact that sometimes they can't meet expectations. So I think like visually displaying that this is something that has a history is important when you have students who like don't know that at all.
Yeah, like maybe even just having an open conversation like this one in the classroom at the beginning of the semester.
Yeah. And I think you can even anecdotally too, like right now, I have a lot of students who are in STEM and I have experience in STEM as well. And I think there's a lot of concerns around like competition and grades and anxieties about performing in a specific way. And I think a certain like amount of being honest with your students is also humanizing yourself and like admitting that grades have also caused stress for you. And sharing that with them, I think, lets them trust you a little bit more in what you're doing.
I really like that. I've definitely had some students open up to me about how competitive their programs are, especially those who are doing like the pre-professional kinds of things. Like I have a lot of students who want to do pre-med, and it's very cutthroat, and it is very much based on scores. So I think offering that kind of a space for compassion and a more kind of humanistic approach is something that we're really empowered to do as English teachers, that will give them a different kind of experience and help them realize the value of, you know, that humanistic side of things. I like that a lot.
I've really enjoyed reading some of these example extra labor opportunities, ELOs, because I think that having those be contingent for you to raise your grade in your class reflects, I don't know if it's an idealistic or I don't know if it's realistic, I'm not sure, but it reflects a certain part of success throughout your life, that just being able to turn in a great paper one time isn't necessarily going to set you up for success long term. It's, you know, putting yourself in uncomfortable things and, you know, pushing yourself to do things you've never done before. You know, not like resting on your laurels of being able to write a good one-page paper, but trying to submit a review to the New York Times student review contest or reflecting on your writing. And I think sometimes that push forward is something that students that are getting good grades don't necessarily like continue to push themselves to do. So I think that, I don't know, maybe there would be some anxiety for students who are used to getting A's to know that they have to do new things to continue to get those A's. But I think that that's such an important life lesson for them to kind of grapple with at this like turning into college moment anyways.
I like how you're thinking about it from that perspective, because I feel like I've tended to think about labor-based grading or contract grading to like help students who may not necessarily normally make an A, like give them an opportunity to like focus on effort instead of thinking so much about outcome. But I think that's a great point, how it also challenges students who may be more effective writers to start with and making them a little bit more uncomfortable.
There was a quote, though, that I wanted to pull that really got me thinking kind of about my students that maybe tend to get lower averages. You know, I really like this quote. I think they're quoting someone else in this article, somebody named Wilson, but, you know, this contract grading allows professors to give students the gift of a human response. And you know, the article also talks at length about how grading turns into, writing feedback turns into grade defense, defending your grade and why you're giving your student this grade instead of actually trying to help them become a better writer. And, you know, I think one thing I've noticed this semester is that I feel like my students that are getting high grades get this gift of a human response because I don't feel like I have to defend their grade because I know that they are happy with it. And that gives me more space to talk about their writing style and stuff. But when I feel like I need to justify a lower grade, they don't really get as much of that human response because I feel like I'm having to justify my grade instead. So I like that this kind of tries to even out that playing field and give writers who might need some more feedback or you know, just less familiar with a mode straight into that section of, I'm not just defending the grade I'm giving you. I'm like giving you this human interaction that is going to inspire you to want to write more anyways. So I don't know if you guys, you know, have thoughts on this gift of a human response, like breaking down this weird grade carrot stick thing and what that does. But I think it could be really impactful for students who are new to writing or not comfortable with writing.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I think like regardless of the grade my own students receive on their work, I still try to aim to have like a minimum of certain like comments or questions on their material to sort of like push forth that like egalitarian sense. Even if it's flawless, it doesn't really need like genuine commentary. Like it still deserves it because it can still be elevated in some form.
Yeah, and just kind of pressing them to recognize the importance of words that aren't being read symptomatically for, oh, they hate my work or they love my work. I think that that is also really important to acknowledge, that writing is not just something that you can put into one category or the other. Like, it's a much more complex thing. And I feel like especially for students who maybe do think more and the maybe most of their work is evaluated through that kind of very objective, like, you know, it's A, B, or C, and if you get it wrong, it's wrong. There's not room for nuance. And I think kind of we can sort of teach students the importance of nuance through our comments by you know, giving more kind of complex feedback. And if they're not reading it with that kind of moral valence, I think that there's a lot of opportunity for them to learn from it and to recognize the value of it in and of itself, not as a justification for a grade, as Emma was pointing out.
I don't know if students like are always receptive to that initially, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, because I think like the nuance you were talking about sometimes can be like confusing when you're used to like mainly either positive or mainly negative feedback. But I think maybe seeing how that can change throughout the semester, it can be effective and useful for them, even if they don't necessarily like it.
Yeah, I feel like now that I know my students well enough, I'm much more comfortable saying like, wow, this paragraph really inspired me or moved me. I think like you're doing a really great persuasive or, you know, whatever kind of mechanism here. But I don't know how I would feel about giving that very like human personal feedback to these students that I don't know yet. And I think maybe that's still a good thing. And it'll just be like kind of uncomfortable for everyone the first couple times. But I mean, maybe it'll just help people get to know each other. But I guess, yeah, how comfortable do you guys feel like being more frank as a reader with your students? Because I feel like that demands a certain level of vulnerability from us as well. That isn't always there with more traditional grading.
I feel like it is getting easier throughout the semester. And maybe it's just like the different units, because I'm not as familiar with like the natural sciences. So it was easier for me just to think about like certain elements of writing that you're typically looking for, like structure, topic sentences, or just pointing out things like that. But I'm hoping as I continue teaching 105, I can think about those pieces of writing as like writing on their own and not just an amalgamation of different elements that I might be looking for.
Can I ask, picking up on Emma's point about vulnerability, if you could talk or think a little bit about the relationship between these grading schemes that you pick for your class and the posture or the ethos that you want to represent? Like, can you be one of these sort of like authoritarian, all business instructors and use contract grading? Or, you know, when you switch to contract grading, does it kind of change the feel and the posture that you have as an instructor? How does the grading scheme relate to the overall atmosphere and kind of stance that you represent or the performance that you give?
I think I have something very specific in mind to answer that question. I've already been revising my syllabus because I have a busy semester next semester and I want to get it done. But, you know, I think I'm moving towards this labor-based contract grading, whatever we want to call this sort of mix that we're describing ourselves being gravitated towards. But another thing that a policy that I think I will implement on my syllabus is that late work isn't accepted. And that's because I'm going to do like only 10% grades for each unit project, and the majority of their grade will be a final portfolio. So it would be such a small part of their grade anyways. And, you know, the whole point of having them turn in those unit projects step by step on time is so that they can give each other feedback. So if they miss the peer review, it really doesn't make sense for them to turn it in. They should just keep it and revise it on their own for the portfolio. But I feel like I'm feeling such a strange persona disconnect there. I feel like there's this assumption that, you know, contract graders, there's this feeling of, I don't know, maybe, you know, like a more of like a hippie teacher that doesn't really like care and wants to establish this really free space. And I think that is very much the teacher I want to be. But then having that like no late work accepted, I think it will be important to have some sort of logistic flow to the class and not let things kind of spiral off the reins and just stuff isn't getting turned in because we sort of have these lower labor requirements. But I feel like there's a persona mismatch between, you know, really open collaborative contract grading and then only work accepted.
I feel like there's certain like policies or pedagogies that I have where I think I kind of do embody that more like loose, like freeness. But then also things like I've taught before where I haven't accepted late work unless you ask me under these very specific circumstances. And I think part of the kind of ethos behind contract grading is like explaining why you're doing things and like, why aren't you accepting late work? If you communicate that to your students, I think that that kind of balances it out. And I think something I think a lot about when I think about like the kind of authoritarian figure of a teacher is like this idea of respect and what that means and how certain people demand that in spaces. And I think respect, I have found at least, like I don't ask for that necessarily and I don't expect it from my students, but I think that being honest with them gives me that because they like they feel like they can trust me and they understand why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I think that changes the classroom dynamic no matter what kind of policies I've had before.
That's a great point about communication because I think like being more authoritarian or authoritative on some respects, like regarding late work, like that's not necessarily a bad thing because as you explained, like you do have a reason behind it. And I think some of the best teachers I've had are like more on that strict side. Mm-hmm. But I really like how you're talking about contract, like part of that contract is explaining to your students why you're doing what you're doing. Because I think like personally as a student and I know a lot of other students like do want structure in some form that does like make the classroom a better place, I think.
I like that comment about structure, I think. And Devin, your comment's so helpful too of just making sure like the reasons are communicated so that I guess what I would be worried about is they would assume some sort of authoritarian role behind a policy that sounds really strict like that. But then, you know, explaining that it helps them be courteous to each other for peer reviews. It helps everyone maintain a sense of structure and feel like they're not like falling off the wayside in the middle of the semester. That's really helpful feedback.
Well, thank you. This has been an interesting conversation. I'm totally excited about the prospect of people doing more contract grading, more portfolio-based grading. I think when you move the grades to the background, ideally, the projects come to the foreground. And I really liked how you all picked up on the idea of the human interaction that's part of the teaching equation. So, you know, I think that's a navigation or a negotiation that plays out while teaching. And maybe if this, you know, raw score that you have to assign somewhere becomes less present, that actually smooths the way for that to play out in a more productive way where, you know, you're mentoring, you're guiding and helping, and the grades are less important. Yeah. Fantastic. Well, thank you, everyone. It's been an enjoyable episode, and I hope our listeners will tune back in. For everyone listening, the name of the article today was called Labor-Based Grading, A New Ethic for Writing Feedback. And tune in next time for another episode of Teach Right.